Although Chang Rui-Lee must be used to receiving great reviews by now, the response to his latest novel, his fifth, has been kind of extraordinary. In a front-page review in Sunday's New York Times, Andrew Sean Green called it wonderful and marvelous and praised the author's virtuosity. And in the L.A. Times, Parachista Kakpur suggested Mr. Lee is among the greatest novelists writing today. The book in question, On Such a Full Sea, is set at an unspecified time in the future after an environmental catastrophe has left Asia and other parts of the world uninhabitable. The residents of those regions have been brought to what had been the United States to re-inhabit now abandoned post-industrial cities, including Baltimore and Detroit, where they work in labor camps producing food and clothing for the wealthy. It's published by Riverhead, and I'm very pleased that it brings Chang Rui-Lee back to our show. Hello.
Great to be here again, Leonard.
You're best known for your realistic fiction. This is the first novel you've written that can be described as dystopian or science fiction or speculative fiction, as Margaret Atwood likes to call it. Did it feel risky at first?
I was a little bit daunted, and frankly, I kept it under wraps for quite a while. I felt as if, not because I was so afraid of what people might say, but I didn't want to get locked into a certain kind of idea about a story that I should write or might be expected to write. And I just wanted to kind of explore this premise that I'd come up with and sort of just follow it along and see where it led me.
Well, isn't part of the fun taking chances?
It is, and that's really the main reason one writes or does anything artistic. I mean, I'm always asked why I do such a thing, and I think it's because the rest of our lives, if we're lucky, tend to be fairly secure.
Well, now that this has gotten so much acclaim, are you thinking of writing other novels that are set in the future?
I don't think so. Someone asked me if I would write the sequel to this book, and I said no. The only reason why I'd revisit the fan who's the hero of the book would be if I had a completely different perspective and angle on her and her world. So unless that comes about, I don't see that it would just be more episodes of her.
You seem especially interested in exploring certain themes, wealth, race, class divisions, and your work also hope and betrayal. Do you find yourself returning to those things?
I think I'm always concerned with betrayal, for one. That seems to come up a lot when I sit at my desk.
Have you spoken to a psychotherapist about this?
Well, my father is a psychiatrist, but we didn't speak about those things. I think it's not betrayal committed, but betrayal, the possibility of betrayal that haunts me most. And it's not, of course, just between friends or lovers, but betrayal to oneself and one's, I guess, standards and morals.
Your protagonist, as you said, is a 16-year-old girl called Fan. She lives in Bmore, a labor camp that was once the city of Baltimore, Bmore. Is Fan a direct descendant of the immigrants who were forced by pollution to leave what you've called New China years before this novel began?
She is, and she and her cohort, what I sort of put out is basically in, sort of a mid-sized village in China where things have been poisoned beyond habitation. She comes over she's the descendant of this small village. And so there is I would suppose, an Asian-inflected feeling about this.
Well, this is kind of reversed colonialism.
It is, because these are, I guess, technically the descendants of immigrants, but immigrants who were welcomed and, in fact, quite necessary in the view of, what I call the directorate, the people who have invited these laborers over to provide goods and services for certain classes.
But they say they didn't find many indigenous people when they arrived, which is similar to the way the United States was settled by Europeans.
Yeah, well, when they arrive, they find a completely abandoned section of the city. I say it's, the former Baltimore, but it really could be any forlorn and abandoned urban area. And that's something that I guess I'd been thinking about over the years. And maybe it's because of some of my travels. And if you travel on the train a lot in this country, particularly in the Northeast, you go by lots of neighborhoods that have been pretty much neglected.
In the case of Baltimore, when you're on Amtrak, you see the backs of houses with laundry hanging.
Yeah.
But where have the former residents gone?
Well, presumably they have just disappeared. They were either forced out years, generations before, or left to their own devices to such an extent that they couldn't sustain themselves.
Well, I've been referring to Beemore as a work camp, but don't the people who live there think of it as a good, secure place to live?
Yeah, it's not a work camp in the sense of that they're forced to be there. It's more a factory. And prior to this,
so this is like some of those cities that are growing up that are right now in China.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I saw in the Pearl River Delta. I'd gone outside of Shenzhen to do some research on Chinese factories. My original intent was to write a social realist novel about factory life in China and the
This
the
has come a long
there.
Way.
Yeah. And of course, a lot of that research doesn't get into the book, but I think a profound feeling that I got in doing that research and being in, you know, touring some of those factories does come up.
Well, it's often noted that science fiction or speculative fiction actually is a metaphor for the current world.
Absolutely. I
mean, so that was easily transformed, that idea of a social realist novel wound up being speculative fiction?
Well, it depends on the context, of course. And once you change the context or circumstance around those individuals, then naturally all those other questions and expressions by those people have to change.
The society you've created for this novel has three levels. Beemore is part of the middle level. Above it are the charter villages, which house the wealthy, and at the bottom is the lawless wilderness outside the charter villages and the walled work camps known as the counties. So being banished to the counties would be probably the worst thing that could happen to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, all those societies that you mentioned are precarious. The people in them, whether they're charters or counties people or Beemore people, I think are afraid of, a certain kind of change or some profound happening that might change their circumstance and their living condition.
My guest is Changrai Li, whose latest novel is On Such a Full Sea. It is published by Riverhead Books. It's not clear exactly how far in the future you've set this novel. Why do you decide to leave the time frame vague and, unlike other novels set in the future, leave out the robots and the androids?
Well,
this is really just an extreme version of the world we're familiar with today.
Yeah, it's an extension of the world we know, I think. I wasn't really interested in doing too much world building of that sort. Some speculative fictions are, end up as almost owner's manuals of the places that are imagined, going right down to all the infrastructure and the whole set of codes and mores of that place. And really more I was interested in, again, the human question and the human factor. What are people like when they're pressured by circumstance and by means? And what will they do to get out of them or to survive?
Well, although it's about specific characters, this is really about community as well, and it's narrated by the Beemore community.
Yeah, I was thinking of the narrator of this novel right from the start, and obviously the easiest choice is just to say Fan is going to narrate this novel, or it'll be third person close to Fan, and it'll be sort of a typical story in which we follow the heroine and understand her consciousness and all that. But although she's the central figure of the novel, she's not the central consciousness. We don't really get into her head very much. We get into her head in terms of this Beemore, the community who is following her. And they're the ones for whom her exploits will accrue emotionally, intellectually, psychically. And that, for me, was as much an interest in writing this book as following her adventure tale.
Several reviewers have pointed out that by choosing to make your narrator we instead of I or she, you've given it the feeling of a legend or even a fairy tale. Well, was that an intention?
Well, it wasn't explicitly something that I thought about, but once I began writing it, I found that I enjoyed the sort of choral quality of the narration. But what I wanted to do with this chorus was not have a chorus that was monolithic and absolutely consistent. I didn't want a chorus that knew all the time. I was actually, once I began writing it, I thought it would be fun to have some flexibility with this voice, that this voice would be at some times unsure of what they were seeing, perhaps narrating things that they wished they would see. You know, it'd be slightly more unreliable than a typical kind of, you know, third party.
The people who populate your novel worry about their health because testing has shown that almost everyone carries a C gene, which will eventually cause illness and death. And only one person, Fan's lover, Reg, she's 16, but
yes,
pregnant. I don't want to give away too much of the plot.
Yeah.
He doesn't carry the C gene. Isn't there a speculation among his neighbors that Reg may have superior genes because he has African ancestry?
Yeah, that he has that indigenous, quote-unquote, blood, which is, you know, a point of interest, certainly, to the most of the citizens of Bmore. And, you know, the book is brings up race. It doesn't go into issues of race as much as, say, a different book might. But clearly it's something that the community of Bmore is aware of and has slightly conflicted feelings about.
And then early in the novel, Reg inexplicably disappears when Fan can't get any information about him. Inside Bmore, she runs away to search for him. Isn't leaving the security of the camp thought of as an incredibly risky thing to do?
Yeah, almost a death sentence in their view, in their lore, certainly. And I think that's what captures the attention of Bmore, you know, this audacity, the quiet audacity, but audacity that Fan has, that she'll fling herself out into the maw of this chaos, and I think that's what they can't help but keep thinking about, and of course leads to the idea for them about what the prospects for their own freedom or imagination might be.
Well, then she has her own adventures, including being hit by a car and other things that almost feel Voltairean to me.
Well, she, you know, I had a lot of fun writing those episodes. You know, she encounters a troop of acrobats who turn out to be quite bloodthirsty. she meets a very, very strange group of kept girls later on. And again, you know.
She's treated by a veterinarian.
She's treated by a veterinarian in the counties instead of a real doctor. And again, it's you know, I'm having fun with the world that's out there, but again, in each of these instances, I'm ultimately interested in how these people came to be who they are, and they didn't always start out that way, as the case with the veterinarian.
Now, the copy of the book I have has a regular cover, but the Wall Street Journal reported that your publisher is releasing 200 copies and have a 3D cover. Designed by MakerBot?
Yeah. Well, all covers are 3D, I guess. But this is something that was printed out, a slipcase for a special hardcover edition that was printed out on a MakerBot 3D printer. And I heard that it took 10 hours to print out each of these. And they're quite beautiful and stunning. And I was really quite captured by the look of it. It made the idea of a book, you know, that this book... It just looked very special to me, which I kind of liked.
In his review in the Boston Globe, John Freeman called you one of our most silken storytellers. Now, English is your first language, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't, actually.
Do you think that affects your approach to prose?
Well, it certainly affected my approach to life when I was 5 or 6 years old. I remember not speaking any English until really getting into the first grade. And I think you know, whether that's just my nature or it's that experience, but I've always been very attuned to language. I've always been very attuned to how accents and cadences and sounds that people make. And my first foray into writing was in poetry, which is, of course, is more about the music of language than what it says.
But it's interesting that so many people who come to English later become some of the best stylists.
Well, Nabokov is one.
And Joseph Conrad earlier.
Is one. And, you know, my interests in writing are, of course, to tell a story, but ultimately, you know, what I find beautiful in writing as a reader and as a writer is, you know, to capture this, you know, some unlikely or lovely lyric. And that, for me, is what, you know, probably pushes me to my desk each day. It's fun to figure out what the kinds of things that will happen. And Margaret Atwood always talks about this. It's not just the what, right? It's the who and why. But for me, it's also the sound.
And I'm assuming that you're working on another book.
I am, and
I'm not going to ask you.
I'm just sketching it out. I might return to Asia again. I've been spending more time in Asia. And it was sort of Anglophone Asia, actually, in Hong Kong. And Seoul, Korea is now so English-oriented in certain ways, in a funny way. And so I'm thinking about another book set in Asia, but probably with a more global feel.
Chang Ray Lee will be in conversation with Laurie Muchnick, president of the National Book Critics Circle at the Brooklyn Public Library at 10 Grand Army Plaza tonight at 7 p.m. He'll also be reading at the MakerBot Soho store on January 16th and reading and signing books at the Upper West Side Barnes & Noble store on January 22nd. For more information on all those events, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. On Such a Full Sea is published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Leonard.